Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
We have another packed show for you this week on Dublin's Talking Sport. As always, I talk to Stephen O'Brien about all things NFL and the demise of his beloved Packers, who are going through the mill at the moment. In rugby, I'm delighted to be joined by Owen Doyle, former referee, on his new book, The Ref's Call, A Different Look at the Game and How It Is Seen from the Referee's Perspective. As always, we hear the latest from Declan Drake in all things GAA, and we have a wonderful piece on the success of the Irish women's boxing team in the European Championships with Johnny Stapleton from irishboxing.com. And Alan Cawley rounds up the show with all of the football. So download the show now wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm great. You had a busy night last night and a busy week. I'm looking out the window here at the miserable weather, dark, damp, dreary. I have a group of friends out in Greystones this morning, Ken, who are gone in sea swimming and kidding themselves. I think they want to be the new happy pears. More like the happy prunes, a lot of them in their dry robes, the state of them. But it's not a morning for that. What's it like? You're up in Belfast, are you?
It was beautiful. Well, I've been around the north. We played Derry and with Dennis Taylor.
Yeah.
Played Derry. We were in Coleraine last night. We were in Drogheda in the TLT on Wednesday. And three great nights and a couple of days golf in Roy County Down. And we played Ballyliffin yesterday, which was absolutely magnificent, Reg.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful part of the world, right up the top of Donegal, and wonderful golf course as well.
Very good.
The weather was lovely. We were blessed both days, to be honest.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, well, it has been good, for the most part this week. But it's not looking good now for the weekend. I have to say, it's pretty miserable here this morning. There's floods everywhere. Typical Halloween when the kids are trying to go out in the costumes. They're going to come back soaked to the skin. But anyway, they'll still have a crack. How did last night go?
Yeah, it was really good. Really good crowd in Coleraine, the Riverside Theatre. And really enjoy it. Dennis Taylor's great fun, you know, he always is, you know, and great company, just telling stories and about his world championship win and, you know, over Davis. And of course, it was 8.5 million people stopped, and I was only 14. I don't know whether you remember it, but like it went past 12 o'clock.
Oh, I remember it well. I was watching it, glued to it.
It was the height of snooker, to be honest, you know, 8.5 million after 12 o'clock on BBC. And it was you know, one of those iconic moments in sport. And you never get tired listening to a story how he potted the black. And, you know, he came back because he was, he was 8-0 down in that final.
Yeah.
And clawed his way back to beat Davis on the black ball. And he's waggled his finger, the whole of the cube above his head, you know. It was quite famous.
I never forget that last black. Yeah. I mean, Davis had that one into the corner. It was a tough cut back into the corner. Yeah, but Davis was at the absolute height in his prime. Never going to miss that. Never in a million years going to miss that. And then you're kind of watching it through your fingers nearly looking at the telly, and he misses it. But I always remember Dennis when he goes down to take it, and then he has to sort of just steady himself before he took it, and then that the way he just held the cue in two hands above his head shaking.
Oh, it was brilliant.
An amazing moment. Dennis is an absolute gent. Great to hear it's going
well. I mean I was only, what age was I? I was only 14 at the time. You know, and I was getting thrown out of my friend's house in Donnybrook for the last frame because it was getting late, so I had to run all the way from Donnybrook to
get home for
Renle to watch the last. But everybody in the house in Renle, they were all, you know, crowded around the TV. Everybody was glued to it. The streets were empty, you know, everybody was watching it, and it was just fantastic. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then you did the same yourself many years later, and we were all glued to that as well.
You know, coming back, I always tell the story, you know, you come back with the cup, you know, there's thousands of people, like, you know, lining the streets and that. And, you know, fantastic, you know, great day out. I got to the final the following year, right? One match, I lose to John Higgins in the final. I get to the final, just one match, ready, get back to Dublin Airport the following year, have to get a taxi home.
I'm lucky to have the fare for it. Yeah, I know.
Chemistry, winning and losing, first and second, you know. Difference. Oh, well.
That's
good times.
That's life. Absolutely.
Good times back in Old Trafford as well,
right? I was just about to say that to you. Getting giddy.
Yeah,
not so bad.
Delighted to have delighted to have him back in the squad. I think Ten Hag, as we spoke last week, you know, good disciplinarian.
Has Ten Hag won the battle?
I think so, without a doubt, yeah. Because he dished out the discipline. Ronaldo took it. And he said, look, it's only one match. It doesn't mean he has to be, you know, thrown out of the club. And he probably will. I mean, he'll probably leave. He might leave in January. But I hope he doesn't. I hope he stays till the summer.
Yeah, it's hard to know who'll want him. You know, that's the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
After this type of behaviour.
He might go to America. You know, America might be the next destination for him.
Yeah, but that's kind of where old horses go to, you know, finish off their days and graze.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, but he still could do, you know, he could make great things over there. You know, Beckham did, Rooney did, you know.
Oh, absolutely. In terms from a commercial side and all that kind of stuff and pushing himself forward, absolutely. Yeah. That's what America's all about. But from playing football and winning Ballon d'Ors, that's it. You know, you hang
on. That'll be it. Yeah. Yeah. But I think he has to stay playing very competitive football until, of course, after this World Cup, you know, and that's important for Ronaldo. You know, that's the next big thing for him. But it's great to see him back and scored a goal as well. It was very, very good, you know.
So your confidence against West Ham then?
It'll be a tough one. It will be a tough one. They're a good outfit under Moyes. They started off very slow, you know, at the beginning of the season, which was surprising. But they've won the last few games now and sort of climbed back up the table, the mid-table they are now. But they're always a tough opposition. But I think United have played well. I mean, they played really well against Tottenham. You know, it's going to be another tough test for them against West Ham. They've had some tough matches over the last few weeks. But I think they'll have a run of good matches after West Ham and well, of course, after the World Cup as well, you know. So, but things are looking up. I think he's the right man for the job.
It's a bit of a slippy slope for us at the moment. Getting that draw last week didn't help, but I suppose we didn't lose. I got a point out of it.
But
City will be piling on the pressure now. But the injury worries. It'd be interesting to see how they manage, you know, Haaland, how bad is that injury and what the situation will be, but also how City perform if they do have to play games without him and how that'll work out, you know. But Leicester had a bit of a surprising win last week, so Leicester away is a tricky one they need to get over.
Yeah, they will, but I think they'll have too much of them. I think, you know, again, Leicester, to see them down the bottom of the table, you know, is very surprising. He's a good manager, Rodgers, you know. They won the league only a few years ago, believe it or not. You know what I mean? That was one of the greatest wins ever in the Premiership. So, but I think City will have too much power, you know. And, of course, Arsenal, your own team there at home, the Forest, that should be pretty straightforward. Even though Forest had a good win against Liverpool.
Yeah.
But I think they'll have too much for them.
A shock win against Liverpool, it has to be said. There was no one saw that coming. I didn't see the game, but I heard that Liverpool had something like 20 shots on goal, and how they didn't score was incredible. So it's one of those games where you're just holding your head in your hands, probably as a manager, going like, there's nothing more we can do. But there's it's funny how quickly, even for Klopp, pressure starts to come on, you know. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it is.
And of course, Katie changing sports. Katie's in fighting later on tonight as well, against Carabajal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, another tough test for. Well, I mean, it's an Argentinian girl, but she's, you know, she's keeping going, Katie. She wants that big fight against Serrano and hopefully a Croker next year.
Yeah.
I mean, that won't be the ideal one.
And Hearn has said basically that he thinks she deserves it as well. So there's every chance that it could go ahead, but she just needs to get this one out of the way tonight. I've no doubt.
She wanted to fight her earlier, actually, but Serrano wanted a few fights under her belt before she took her on again. So these are sort of warm up fights. I can't see the Argentinian deal much. You know, it's the first time she's fought outside her country, even though she's unbeaten herself. But it's a bit of a step up in class for her. But Katie, hopefully that big fight in Serrano. Back, well, in Croker. She hasn't fought there yet. You know, she's won all her fights outside of our country, but it'll be great to be able to cheer her on in Crow Park, you know.
It's time for NFL now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by a heartbroken Stephen O'Brien. Morning, Stephen. How are you?
Well, I'm glad you said heartbroken, Red. Didn't sort of go all out. You know what? This morning, it's been terrible weather here, and I've just been standing in the back garden, fully clothed, Reg, just taking my punishment in the rain. Packers lost again.
At least you're not naked.
Again, Reg. You know.
it is. It's you haven't gone so bad as to take all the clothes off and just stand out there wondering what's going on. But it was. It has to be said. It was a shock. It was a shock result. We were kind of joking about it last week, but. What's going wrong? I mean, Aaron Rodgers making headlines as well, criticising the team publicly, and it's just a brutal start.
Yeah, you know yourself, Reg, as a, you know, you reach the pinnacle of your game, and you can see that, you know, within the locker room when you're winning, everyone gets behind the coach and everything's all rosy. But the minute you start to lose, Aaron Rodgers called it, people break rank. So, you know, they start to kind of turn on each other. Now, Aaron Rodgers, he hit the headlines, as you say, right? And the reason is because he said on the Pat McAfee show, which is on every single week, he, to me, stated the obvious, right? And I don't think the problem is what he said. I think, and should he have said it publicly or whatever? Now, he's saying he says it privately. What he said was, he said, look, if people aren't playing well, well, then we start cutting reps. So they should pull people from the team if they're not performing. Now, what that ultimately did was they looked at him and said, you know, like, really throwing stones in a glass house here, Aaron, because he hasn't been playing well himself, Reg. And it's kind of bizarre because around the league, you look at these experienced quarterbacks and they've been so consistent for forever. You know, Aaron Rodgers is the back-to-back MVP of the league. And what does that mean? It means that out of every player in the NFL, he's voted by journalists and players that he is the best. He has not looked that way this season. They've lost one player, really, that has a massive impact, which is Devontae Adams. But everyone said that Matt LaFleur, the head coach, was this offensive mastermind and he's always got Aaron Rodgers as the MVP and Aaron Rodgers can make everybody look great. But that simply hasn't happened this season. And they're losing to teams, Reds, that are playing their second and third string quarterbacks who the defenses should be able to pin their ears back and knock these guys on their backsides. But they haven't been able to do it. And that's because their offense goes out, errors if I play for the team. Goes out on the field and they just can't get anything going. No first down. So everybody's culpable. But again, as you said, we've hit the headlines because Aaron Rodgers seemingly put the whole team on blast. But look, it's not new for him, is it? I mean, we spoke about it before. He puts his foot in his mouth in the media and then people have a field day on it. And, you know, but it's bad for the Packers. And in fact, they go into this week, Reg, against the Buffalo Bills. And we've spoke about these guys. These are the Super Bowl favourites, Reg.
Yeah.
And for the first time in Aaron Rodgers' career, he's a minus 11.5 in the bookies. So he's right. Like 11.5 underdog. So the first time in his career, he's been double-digit underdog in a game. So it's a real indictment of where the Packers are right now.
Yeah. What does it mean, though, at this stage of the season? Like, is it season over for them? Are there going to be a load of heads rolling as a result of this? Or is there a chance to redeem themselves?
You see, the thing is, Reg, I mean, they've signed all their coaches and their front office staff to new contracts because the bizarre part is that Matt LaFleur, it was the first time we were speaking a couple of weeks ago, it's the first time he'd lost back-to-back games. So this is still seen as a high-powered offense that just can't get out of their own way, that they're beating themselves. But as you say, I mean, talking about heads rolling or giving up on the season, some fans have been calling, based on Aaron Rodgers' play, to bench him and put in Jordan Love, who they drafted in the first round. You know, and that's what I mean. Sometimes the fan base goes absolutely nuclear. And to a degree, I can kind of understand it. The thinking of it is that they can turn this thing around. But they're really up against it, Reg, because they're coming up against the Buffalo Bills this week. And then the Cowboys, who have a winning record, they're coming up against them. The Titans, who have a winning record, they're coming up against them. So they're playing away from home, which is difficult. And then when they come back to Lambeau, they're the games actually we're going over for the group trip to see. So looking ahead, you know, it's very hard to find an escape rope. But the only thing is you put Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, and they have been playing some dynamite football, you put them as massive underdogs. Maybe it takes the pressure off, Reg, and people start to play with a bit more reckless abandon, you know, and it's sort of, but I don't know, if they're in a bad situation to be losing to a team like the Commanders, which, again, I put them in my ACA because it seemed like, this is the one game that they'll pull out of the bag, so they couldn't.
Yeah, well, it's not all roses either for Tom Brady. Things aren't going well. His season downhill with the Bucs. And also, sad to see divorce proceedings with Giselle. We spoke about the fact that he's married to supermodel Giselle Bündchen before. But the rumours, of course, are always going to be it's because he went back playing ball after being retired and everything else. But it's just not, probably not the fairy tale style season that he was thinking he was going to have.
No, exactly like you say, there's speculation that, you know, the divorce happened because he went back playing football. And there's all of this innuendo in the gossip rags about like cryptic posts people put up. But if, you know, and as you say, you don't really want to wade into the whole gossip side of things. But it really does change the narrative for a lot of people, Reg. I mean, because she was quite publicly coming out and saying the fact that he was so committed to the game and that he wasn't at home looking after the kids, which is, you know, it makes you look at a supermodel and a superstar athlete who's, you know, who has two or three Hall of Fame careers rolled into one. You look at them like, oh, yeah, these are normal people now. But, you know, before Reg, you'd see him and he would be with the Patriots and they'd go through a rough patch and he'd be at the sideline, he'd be throwing tablets around, he'd be screaming at people. And he'd get them back on side, kind of like Aaron Rodgers and kind of like Russell Wilson with the Broncos. He just doesn't seem to have the capability to do that anymore. Either he can't get the players to rally behind him or he literally can't make the throws himself. So it's very easy to lead by example. But when he's not been able to make the throws, you know, it's not good. So what we're seeing unfolding in front of our eyes has gone from looking at Tom Brady like this guy who allegedly has it all at home and, you know, has all the endorsements, has won all the Super Bowls. And when he starts yelling at his players on the field, it's that fire and that passion. And that slowly started to turn their red. So he is, again, like Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, he's a losing season. This is the first time he's had a team under 500 since 2002, Reg, right, when he first came into the league with the Patriots. And it's desperate, right? Because it goes from him yelling at his team because he's a fiery guy to yelling at his team because he's old and because he's desperate now.
Yeah.
It seems like all he has left is that, you know, his family life has kind of disintegrated off the field. As you said, they announced their divorce and finalized this week. So you look at him now and kind of feel sorry for him instead of looking at him as that sort of great sportsman. So again, he might be able to turn it around the same as the Packers might be able to. But his narrative, again, has changed. And it just goes to show the human side of Tom Brady.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing, though. It kind of brings into focus again. Maybe it's ego. I don't know what. But like, yeah, at some stage, sports people have to recognise when the writing's on the wall and when the time is up. You know, very few can do like Roger Federer is doing, you know, like bring it, be brilliant to the end and know when to stop. Tiger even will be an example of it. You look at Ronaldo, there's so many examples through history of you just have to know when to stop, and maybe Tom Brady should have known that too. But anyway, that's another conversation. Okay, the last of the London games is on this weekend. We're seeing the Jacksonville Jaguars taking on the Denver Broncos, and the Broncos coach is the one in the hot seat for this one.
Yeah, it's amazing so early, but they do these sort of pep rallies. And this is the thing, this is the sad part of it, is that when the Packers played the Giants, it was the first time that two teams with a winning record played in London. And I was saying to people, now you're going to see some real football. The Giants are pretenders. The Packers are going to put it to them. And then in the first half, it all came true. And we were like, yeah, this is real football. And then the Packers got spanked in the second half. And now we're back to London games where both teams are 2-5. You know, they should be an awful lot better than they are. Because that's what's bizarre. It's almost like a London curse. You know, you look at these teams and they get a new quarterback and they're supposed to be all swanky and sexy and great. And Trevor Lawrence is in for the Jags. And then they come over and lay an egg. And that's the way it is here. But as you say, I mean, the Broncos, they're 2-5. They're taken over by new ownership. And again, it's amazing that the quarterback, you have to be able to get behind the quarterback and he has to lead the room. And we saw that with the Washington Commanders last week. You know, they said that they got behind their third-string quarterback and they died for him. And they ended up beating the Packers. And that's sometimes what this game can come down to. That's what they say any given Sunday. But like you said, Nathaniel Hackett came from the pedigree of the Packers. The dynamite offense, they were winning 13 games every season. And in fact, because Nathaniel Hackett left the Packers to become head coach of the Broncos and the Packers are struggling, people are putting that question to Aaron Rodgers, Reg, saying, oh, was he the magic ingredient?
Yeah.
So it's surprising to see him in Denver with Russell Wilson on that $245 million contract. And here's these stories coming out of Russell Wilson stretching for 4 hours on the plane coming over. Yeah. And then he's releasing these Subway ads, which are really, really cringe. But like you say, he's on the hot seat because the owners came out and said, oh, yeah. No, look, he's the first team head coach. We support him. And then they add in that caveat, Reg, which puts people on notice. But the second half of the season, we need to start winning games now. Because unfortunately for Nathaniel Hackett,
yeah,
the first team head coach, which is difficult. And also, he's got all the firepower to be able to win, but he hasn't been able to do it. So his job is infinitely harder.
Okay, time for rugby now. And this week, something a little bit different. I'm delighted to be welcoming to the show Owen Doyle. Owen is a former international rugby referee who I've known since my school days playing rugby. He retired from reffing on the pitch himself in 94, but he was director of rugby for the RFU from 1995 to 2015. It's a memoir of 2015 to 2017. Owen has written a great book now. It's called The Ref's Call, and it's a memoir of a rugby referee looking at it from a different angle. And delighted to welcome Owen to the show this morning. Morning, Owen. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you? Great to chat again.
Absolutely, yeah. It's great to be chatting where you're not giving out to me for a change, you know?
Yeah, well, it is a bit of a change, yeah. But you've seen the great changes, which I have also in the game. And, I mean, you, as far as I remember, your career sort of was in the amateur, but also you were playing international right up to...
Congratulations on the book. It's great to see.
So you saw the changes coming.
Absolutely. Right across the board, from amateur to professionalism, and it did change. There's no question about it. Congratulations on the book. It's great to see it. I suppose the first and most obvious question is, why on earth did you decide to write a book like this?
Well, it was funny. I'd been writing in the Irish Times, and a few friends were egging me on, like, I bet you couldn't write a book. And then during COVID, I started to jot down a few things, and I suddenly realised, you know, there is a bit of a story to tell here. And there are some things, you know, worth recording, like the success of Irish referees and Seven. And, of course, the ladies, I mean, talent like the Alan Lewis, the Peyton Hughes, Elaine Rolland, who did the World Cup final in 2007. And, of course, the ladies, I mean, Joy Neville, who I think is refereeing a quarterfinal of the Women's World Cup today or yesterday. Mm-hmm. And she may go further in that competition, and Helen O'Reilly. So we had a great time. We also had great fun doing it. And you wonder, is it as much fun now?
Yes, I often question myself that very thing in terms of the players. I somehow don't think it maybe is as much fun, but I think maybe it's more of that profession role and seen as a job, maybe more so for the players now, and they treat it in that way. Would it be the same for the referees? Do you get that impression that's
exactly
their career?
Reggie, that's a great point, because I mean, I wouldn't have wanted to be a full time referee, and I know that everybody's products of their time. But what you say is right. I mean, the current guys are doing it for a job. And again, the guys I mentioned before from Ireland, they'd all good jobs. And I think, for example, I think that's very good that you can get away from it. And you're not moaning and groaning about the mistakes and analysing and parsing and going on and on ad nauseum, which they do at the moment. Mm. The fortunate people are the unusual ones, like Wayne Barnes. I mean, he's a barrister. And he barrists, or whatever you call it, a couple of times a week. And if he's dropped, which of course he won't be, but if he's dropped, he can just go full time barrist. But some of the others, you know, you worry about. There won't be a role for all of them in the game. So the minute they start in a professional career, their unions must start planning their exit, because at 45, when you finish, what on earth are you going to do next?
And you know, that's something that's dealt with within the players, with the RPI and various groups looking after the players. But it's still a massive struggle for them, and a huge number of players do find it difficult to change career and find something for themselves to do. Have you noticed in your time involved with the IRFU and as head of elite referee coaching that has been a symptom of the game turning professional, that you are seeing more referees struggling?
Well, it happened in my era when other unions did have full time, and without naming the guys, there are some guys struggling,
right?
Both mentally and finding it very hard to pick up bits of work here and there, and you see them at tournaments in strange places running the referee program for that tournament. But it's not a healthy way to try and survive, and it certainly is not a healthy way to try and pay your mortgage.
Yeah.
Ireland only went full-time refereeing 2017, I think.
Right.
It was inevitable because the demands are huge on them. I mean, they're traveling all over the world. I don't believe they're paid enough either. That needs to be looked at, and they need a representative body rather like the players have.
Right. Okay, well, I mean, you were involved, okay, in recruitment, obviously, in your role and trying to attract people into the game. And following on from what you've just said there, what's it like trying to recruit referees or get people interested in playing the game? I mean, my young lad is playing under 15s, and I was down in Clane last Sunday for under 15s match. Greystones were playing Clane, and I have to say, the referee was one of the best I've seen in years. He was incredible at explaining things to the players, but also knowing the rules of the game and delivering a brilliant game for everybody to watch. But is it hard to attract people into it now, given what you've said?
Well, there are two types of recruitment. One is for the amateur game, and then one is for the professional game. I mean, Alain Roland was an example of the professional when he came in and basically said, look, Owen, I don't want to hang around. How fast can I go? And we said, we go as fast as you can go. Mm. And, you know, within 4 years, he was refereeing a World Cup quarterfinal, and within 8, he did the final. Mm. Down through in the amateur game, it's getting harder because there's a lot more touchline abuse coming. I mean, there was a case the other day of a club in Northern Ireland, and they're having to play their match, I think it's today, behind closed doors because of supporter abuse. And it can be a societal thing that there are changes. I mean, you only have to look at social media. I mean, some of it is absolutely chilling, the stuff about referees on it.
Yeah.
At all levels. And Reggie, it goes down to schools level, schools coaches, not all of them. Some of them are absolutely brilliant. But some of them screaming at the touchline with their hands out, screaming blue murder at the ref, and that leads up to problems on the pitch and other supporters getting involved. You know, you have to ask, you know, who'd really want to do it at that level? Yeah. But still there are guys who do it, and they do it, they're volunteers, and they should be respected as such.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I suppose
it's great to hear that you got such a good one. That's true.
Well, I did. He was fantastic, and you know, I made a point of saying it to him afterwards. It doesn't always happen, and that's, I suppose, particularly why it stood out to me. But I know I do also realise that everybody there is volunteering, giving up their time, and you have to admire referees that do it. And my kids are in all sport, from soccer to Gaelic to rugby, so I see it, and it's what makes the game function. But I suppose it brings me on to the next point, which is, like, money has come into rugby. It's not the game that I started playing. There's no question about it. It has changed dramatically over those years, and you know, you can't live in the past, and you've got to accept that things do move on. But do you see the game and referees in particular within that role has changed for the better or for the worse? I mean, you know, so a lot of people find it a bit negative, the game, the way it's gone.
No, absolutely. If you have to win, I mean, there's no Corinthian spirit left.
Yeah.
The only reason for going out there is to win. Now, that makes it very difficult for the referees, and they've got really, really over-technical. I mean, the other day we had a match with 39 penalties. And you could say, well, technically, you know, they were probably all correct. But where is the referee now who's willing to turn a blind eye to offences that don't matter? Because the coaches will pick him up and say, look, we shouldn't have been back in our 22 because you failed to give us this little nudge in the line-out. We actually had no effect on play. And I think when I was reffing, you know, you made a decision not to blow your whistle more often than you made a decision to blow it. But that has really, really changed. And the playing has changed. I mean, we had our iconic centre the other day sent off for a very bad hit charging into a ruck.
Yeah.
And we had an identical one. I was just sent a clip, Reggie, before you phoned, of Retallick in New Zealand, Japan. It's an identical hit of what Bundyaki did the other day.
But you can see it everywhere, Owen. You can see it all the time, all the tackles that come in. There's no, despite the sanctions, there's very little change in it. You know, the similar tackles and the similar hits are coming in all the time.
Yeah, well, until the coaches buy into it, and it's hard to imagine that they're buying into it now, because they want the win more than anybody else, because their job is depending on it.
Yeah,
I mean, rugby was never, and I make the point in the book, was never designed to be played for money.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting point.
It's not a sport that suits it. It doesn't suit it. There are too many variables. A lot of penalties could go one way, as much as they could go the other way.
Let me ask you something. leading on from that then, the player welfare element of it, and because of what we've discussed with tackles and concussion being the absolute buzzword on everybody's lips, and now we've got these cases coming up against all of the unions, is there a fear within referees that they might be somehow liable, a case could be taken against them, that if they make a mistake on the pitch that, you know, and it results in a bad injury for a player, that they themselves might be personally held responsible?
In open play, it's hard to see how it could happen unless a referee is negligent in penalising and sanctioning properly and leaves a player available to do the same thing again. But it's unlikely that that would happen. I mean, it's happened. There have been two cases, and one is covered completely in the book, the Vowles case in Wales, where a referee was held culpable. And the referee put the bar for an amateur ref, in my view, very, very high. But it was a very, very interesting judgment, and it did change how scrums were engaged.
It sort of sounds, from the way you're talking, Owen, as if you feel that there needs to be a bit of a review done, in the sense that, you know, money has changed the game. It's not the game that I played. It's changing all the time, and it's going to get to a point where enough is enough. And where will that lead come from? We can't have the game without referees. Will the lead come from the officiating side of the game, where they'll just turn around and say, lads, you gotta stop. Like, you can't keep selling out to all the various different things, there's too many games or whatever? Or will it just be an amalgamation of ideas, or how do you think it'll unfold?
It'll have to come from World Rugby, and okay. They have a performance committee, which is a fantastic committee. It's made up of a lot of the current coaches, though, and recent former coaches like Steve Hansen, and there's a massive conflict of interest in changing the game.
Yeah.
I actually think they need to look back at the World Cups of 95, which was the last amateur one, 99, 2003, and maybe even 2007, and see, how have we got from then to where we are, and how could we go back to some of these issues?
It's very hard to go back, though, isn't it? Very, very hard to go back.
It's very, very hard. I mean, but they've got here. But if they go on like this, Reggie, for the next 10 years, we will have the NFL in rugby. It'll be played by a few people and watched by millions. Mm-hmm. I mean, I made the analogy the other day about, you know, in ancient Rome, thousands of people, thousands of thousands, hordes would go down to the Colosseum, but not too many wanted to join in.
It's time for football now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. It's a bit miserable here now, I have to be honest with you, weather-wise, but sure, look, we'll get through it and get through a day's sport, watching young lads up and down the country on pitches. But we knew it was going to happen, but Rovers, the title is there, it's done, and another SSE Airtricity League title for them.
Yeah, and to be fair, much deserved, Reggie. Over the course of the season, they were the standout team. They were obviously the favourites at the start when you think of the squad that Stephen Bradley has assembled, and when you think of the challengers that were going to face them this year, a lot of new managers starting out in roles. So you had Tim Clancy starting off at St. Pat's, Stephen O'Donnell starting back with Dundalk in his first season, and of course Rory Higgins in his first full season with Derry. So they're obviously looking to build for the future. So Stephen Bradley was well set, his team was well set, he had the squad assembled, and the only thing that probably may have come against them was if the pressure got to them in that regard. But he managed things really, really well, especially with the squad that he has. He's juggled it around a little bit, particularly in the latter stages with the European games, and they've been the best team and fully deserved, Reggie.
Yeah, absolutely. Overall, I know there's still a few games left in that, but you know, overall, have you been impressed with the league this year? Better standard than previous?
No, I think it's just been okay, to be honest with you, okay. Reggie. Shamrock Rovers, I don't want to take anything away from them, and that's a brilliant achievement to win three in a row, but it's not a surprise because of the challengers, and for the reasons that I outlined. I think they'll be better next year, the three of those teams, because of those managers having a year under their belt as well. Obviously Dundalk have qualified for Europe, so that's an achievement for them, and that's a good platform to build from. St. Pat's have just missed out, but I still think Tim Clancy has done very well there. And of course, Rory Higgins has done a brilliant job with Derry, and they've pushed Rovers close enough towards the end Rovers kind of let them back into it a little bit with the European stuff, and people may have thought, myself included, that it may have been a distraction which would help Derry City, and it did to an extent, but they still had enough to get the job done. But I do think Derry will be much better for the season next year, and I'm expecting not only Derry but the other two to put up a better fist of it and a better challenge. But overall, Reggie, I think the league has just been ordinary enough, to be honest with you.
Okay, and we see Finn Harps have gone down, Ollie Horgan not sure what his future is going to be as manager. It's always difficult when sides go down and you feel for them at the end of the season. How do you think things will unfold there?
Yeah, that hasn't surprised me either. Like, they've been stagnant for quite some time now and jumping up and down a little bit, and kind of just, you look at them getting relegated last night. UCD have done a brilliant job, Andy Myler, and he lost a couple of his better players as well in terms of Liam Kerrigan, and obviously the injury to the centre forward as well. So it's unbelievable really the job he's done, and he's put himself in a position now where they have a chance with the playoff. But Finn Harps, I think they're looking at the moment to move into a new stadium. They have a good underage structure and set up as well, so I think they could be looking at a whole new fresh approach, Reggie, with the likes of Kevin McHugh doing a brilliant job, and start bringing through young local youth, because Ollie has dipped into the market here, there, and every outsiders in, and it hasn't worked now at this stage, and it's not the first time he's done it, and obviously to find themselves relegated. So if they go into the first division and can build for the future with their own players and with the youth of the area, I think they'll be better served in the future.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, we'll see how that all unfolds. Okay, we'll go across the water now, and last week, I suppose, the shock result was that Liverpool result against Forest. Forest managing to pull one out of the bag, 1-0, but it was a shock to see Liverpool losing to them.
Oh, massive surprise, and especially when you think they obviously beat Man City and they beat West Ham, and we're thinking, is this Liverpool back now? Have they turned the corner? So to lose to Forest, and I think Klopp said afterwards himself, he was shell-shocked and one of his lowest points. Fair play to Forest, and obviously they're fighting for their lives and the home crowd behind them, and massive underdogs, so they put in a big performance. But for Liverpool's point of view, it was a poor result, and just when you think they are turning the corner, they put in a performance like that and they end up with a result like that, and it's back to square one. And then to go out during the week, Reggie, and to put in a good performance away to Ajax,
Yeah. They're
very up and down, Liverpool. It's hard to pinpoint exactly what's going on and why it's going wrong at the moment, but I fully expect them obviously to have a big game against Leeds tonight. Leeds are under serious pressure. The manager, they've only picked up 2 points out of 24. I'm surprised he's still there. I thought they would have got rid of him after the result against Fulham last Sunday. But if they were to lose tonight, and I expect them to lose, I think he could be under serious pressure for his job.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of people under pressure at the moment. Ken was on earlier getting a little bit excited. Ronaldo's back in, he's scoring goals. And I said it to Ken, Ten Hag seems to have won the battle there, and you have to admire him for making that stand, but I suppose it had to be made.
Oh, absolutely, Reggie. And not only has he won the battle, I think he'll win the war as well.
Yeah.
Because he's come in, Ten Hag, and he's outlined exactly what he wants. He's putting his print all over the team, which is a good thing. And of course, Ronaldo is the elephant in the room. And other managers have bowed down to it, and other managers have bowed down to other superstars. And I remember Solskjaer indulging the likes of Pogba. And it's only going to end in tears for the manager. But for Ten Hag to come in, do exactly what he's done and lay down the law, I think he's 100% right, Reggie. He's the manager, he calls the shots. I don't think he's been disrespectful to Ronaldo. I think he's been honest and upfront, and has told him, look, you're not going to play every week, and unless you deal with that, it's your issue, and we handle it during the week. You can't do that, what Ronaldo did last week. And
Yeah. He
came back to the team, he had to come back with his tail between his legs, and I think he knows now he's either going to have to put up with it or move on. So I think, as you say, he certainly won the battle, and I think he'll win the war as well, Ten Hag.
There was a little bit of stuff on Sky Sports where we saw Roy Keane and Neville having a head-to-head about it, and Roy Keane seemed to be defending him a little bit. Was he defending him a little bit blindly, do you think, out of loyalty to a friend, or what was your impression of that?
I think a bit of both, Reggie. I think because he's taken such a stance on Ronaldo, Keane, he's not going to back down from it. And to be fair to him, obviously he's played with Ronaldo, he's mad about Ronaldo, whatever the case may be. But I don't think he can defend his actions of what he did, walking off down the touchline and getting in the car and going home, especially when they were winning and all. The manager was proved right that night. It was one of the best performances they put in all year. So Ronaldo just has to deal with it. I know it's probably very difficult for a fella who's been on such a cloud all his life to have to come to terms with the fact that you're not going to be on that cloud anymore,
Yeah. And
you're going to have to become just like a normal player like everybody else. which is probably difficult to deal with, and he's coming towards the end of his career and he's probably having trouble dealing with that as well. And you have to admire Ronaldo for all he's achieved in terms of his mentality, as I think Neville made the phrase about him and Roy Keane, that look, ye are unique characters, but not normal people are not like you. So the normal folk have to just deal with these things, and I think Ronaldo is going to have to become a normal person and deal with this, otherwise he's just going to have to move on. And I think it was good to see him come back and score during the week, and hopefully he can kind of understand the situation, because he can still contribute, Reggie. He can still play his fair share of games, he can still chip in with goals, and he'd still be remembered as the hero that everybody loves him for. But if he throws the toys out of the pram, nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, I have a feeling he'll put the head down now. I think he'll realise, okay, I need to...
And I think he's putting it down because the manager has laid down the law and says, look, I'm not bowing down to this, you know, and he's right. The manager's 100%. Yeah. The only ones we see doing that, Reggie, nowadays is Klopp and Guardiola. And it doesn't matter who you are, they're the boss, they're the manager, and you're either going to toe the line or else good luck. And I think all the managers take a note of that, because the players have too much power nowadays.
Well, absolutely. And we discussed this before, and we discussed it like with my sport in rugby. There was never a question that the player owned the dressing room. And if they did, the manager was gone. Absolutely gone. And once or twice, maybe in my time of observing rugby, that would have been the case. But you're not talking about... You see, there was no way players were able to be in that position of power, because the level of money was never at that. But when it's gotten so out of control, and the club have such a liability and debt-wise invested in this player, they need them out there, that it really diminishes a manager's power. And I think that's what you need to see with, and as you said, you're seeing that coming back, which is ideal.
Yeah, and it's only going to be a good thing for the game. Like, I go back to the most recent example, Solskjaer.
Yeah.
It was so easy on him, Reggie. And in the end, he's the one that suffered. He was always going to lose his job.
Yeah.
But he was indulging the likes of Pogba, who was walking all over him. And in the end, as I said, Solskjaer's the one that's gone. Pogba will still have his career and he'll carry on. And he's the one that loses out. So to see Ten Hag take the stand that he's taken, he's come in, an unbelievable opportunity for him. He's going to make his decisions. He's going to die by his decisions. And if he feels it's right to not allow a player, no matter who it is, Ronaldo, a Pogba, any player, if he's not going to allow them to carry on the way they are, he's 100% right.
It's time to turn our attention to boxing now, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Johnny Stapleton, editor of the irishboxing.com. In a week that has seen an Irish team of 10 winning 7 medals, 3 gold, 2 silver, 2 bronze. They won the team of the tournament, topped the medals table so well that they became the best team in Europe. Amy Broadhurst won Boxer of the Tournament after winning gold at a weight above her natural weight, and Kelly Harrington completed the set and now a World and Olympic gold medal winner. It's really quite an incredible CV, and Johnny, you're very welcome to the show to discuss it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really, really appreciate it. And as you said, it was a great week.
Yeah, it was an astonishing week. I mean, I suppose those within boxing circles would have known the quality of women's boxers that we had coming through the ranks, and all of that talent that's there. But it probably came as quite a surprise to a number of our listeners and to most of the general population who wouldn't be au fait with the way boxing is and how it's developed. So was it a hall of medals, sorry to use the poem, were we boxing above our weight? Did we do better than was expected, or was that was what was expected?
It's over the last couple of years, it's become a case where you go to these tournaments and you are expecting to win medals. Like, if you consider Amy Broadhurst was world champion, so she's going into the Europeans, and you're expecting her to medal, and then Kelly is just such a sensational talent, at reigning Olympic champion, you have hopes on her medaling, and then Michaela Walsh, who won bronze, she's medaling regular at tournaments maybe over the last 10 years or so, and she's won 3 Commonwealth Games medals. I think she's the only fighter to do that. And then there was some younger talent coming through, so like 7, we probably wouldn't have aimed for 7.
Yeah.
But, you know, we probably would have been short of 3 and hoping for 5 maybe. But for 7 of the 10 to do it, you know, it just shows where Irish boxing is at, and particularly Irish women's boxing. And again, like, there's even people like Amy's at a wrong weight. Christina Desmond, who medalled at light middleweight, Lisa O'Rourke is the light middleweight world champion. She won gold at the world championships and didn't travel. So the strength and depth at that weight as well. Like, it's just, and all this year, I suppose, men and women have been meddling on international stage at the underage tournament. With all the wrongs and ills and the politics maybe sort of things, we're continually producing talent and talented boxers.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I heard Kelly Harrington coming out and she was lamenting the loss of Bernard Dunn, that they couldn't resolve the issue and that you know, he's not involved in a high performance level with amateur boxing in Ireland. But there must be decent structures in place all the same for us to be able to get those types of results.
Well, I think you got to put huge praise on the clubs, haven't you, and what they do. And then obviously there is talented coaches within the clubs. And then, you know, if you progress to the high performance, like, I've heard it said this week that, like, it would be Zora Ante, it would be the real sort of irreplaceable. Like, it's his sort of coaching now that sort of brings us to that kind of next level, or that, you know, and a lot of the boxers would, you know, if they have a sort of certain skill set, he'll mould them into a style that suits amateur boxing. Like, if you take Shannon Sweeney, she used to be a bit of an aggressive fighter, but she won bronze, but has sort of changed to that, you know, less aggressive approach, and it's sort of a style more suited to three-round boxing. And I think someone said he's accounted for 150 medals at senior level since he's been here, and that doesn't include, like we're winning tens and tens of medals at World Youths and World's schoolboy, European schoolboy and schoolgirls this year as well.
Yeah.
I think after, the lads, John Conlon and Zor in the high performance, like, they're probably not as front and centre as the likes of Billy Walsh and Bernard Dunmore. But they, you know, they're obviously doing a good job. Like, the results speak for themselves.
And I suppose, Johnny, as well, the visibility of the sport is huge as well. The fact that we all know Katie Taylor, and we'll talk about Katie in a few moments, but we know that she has led the way, and you know, the images of her coming back to homecomings with Olympic gold medals and thousands of people flooding the streets to welcome her back, and then turning pro and winning and being so successful, and that it glamorizes the sport, I suppose, and that's probably one of the main reasons that it attracts young girls into it.
No, definitely. I think Amy Broadhurst, again, like, who has to be said, like, she's fighting above her weight, so she could fight at the same weight as Kelly, which means effectively we've all the best female lightweights in the planet if you would have Amy, Kelly, and Katie as a pro.
Yeah.
Amy, she was met at school by Katie when she won European schools, like, as a teenager, and Katie's been her hero.
Right.
It's got to the point where she sparred her for Katie's last fight. She was over sparring in Connecticut, helping Katie prepare for Amanda Serrano.
Yeah.
And then when she won world gold, and Katie rings her to congratulate her, she's crying because her hero is ringing her. I think these girls are inspiring other girls now, but yeah, like, the Katie factor is just, it's so visible, and it's huge, and I think any female fighter at the minute, like, they'll all, even some of the pros in England, you know, are in awe of Katie. And it's something it's something we all should be proud of, like, the whole of Ireland, like, here's a girl that's changed the sport completely, like, changed the sport.
Yeah.
Someone said to me during the week, we're effectively the Cuba of female boxing.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is down to probably Katie. Like, it's just to have such an inspirational figure.
And, you know, and others following in her footsteps now, as you said, like Amy, and, of course, Kelly Harrington, who's just so brilliant as well. And it's great. You don't want a one-shot wonder, if you know what I mean. You don't want just to be Katie. There needs to be others doing it as well. And we're getting that, and these results are showing that. But amongst the boxing communities that you've spoken to in your, you know, your capacity with IrishBoxing.com, is there a feeling amongst the younger girls that there's also a pathway out of this? If they wanted to go beyond amateur, now there is a really good professional network there that they could go and say, right, okay, look, I'm going to have a go at this and see if I can maybe make it and do well for myself out of it.
Oh, definitely, yeah, yeah, definitely. And, like, you see the popularity, like, Sky Sports and Boxer just ran a whole female fight card a couple of weeks ago. And, like, some people, like, praise the women now for taking, like, fighting the best, and say it's more entertaining than male boxing as a result. Like, so, there's probably not pay parity there yet, but there is a pathway there, and there is, like, particularly all these young amateurs coming through, they were probably streets ahead of a lot of the female pros at the minute. Not top tier, but the tier down. There is no sort of championship in terms of pro boxing at the minute, and a lot of young girls now coming through could step into that easily because of the amateur schooling they have. So, like, there is a pathway there, and probably at the minute, it's like, if you get there first, you could really capitalise.
Yeah, absolutely, and do very well out of it. Okay, finally, Johnny, just the big one later on tonight, as we see Katie Taylor taking on Elizabeth Carabajal, Katie, firm favourite. Hearn already talking about a Croke Park date and trying to hints at retirement for Katie. None of us want to hear that, but hints at that. But to give her a kind of a swan song in Croke Park. So first of all, you expecting a Katie win later tonight, and second of all, is that Croke Park gig going to happen?
You'd expect Katie to win tonight, and in fairness to her, like, people are saying it's not the greatest challenge she's had, but like, they honestly wanted to give her the rest of the year off after the Serrano fight because it was such a tough fight, but she just won't take it. Like, she won't have it. So, you know, and if anyone's earned me, you don't want to call it a gimme, but if anyone's earned, you know, just an outing and a chance to get out, it's Katie. And in fairness to her, she'll train like she was fighting, like the best there ever was. Like, so, but it should be a win. And Crow Park is just, it's just a crazy one because it's all different sort of talk about it, but we talked to Eddie yesterday.
Yeah.
And he was talking about undercard and who trying to get the government involved and tourism and all of, you know, calling Irish people to support it and let's get it done for the greatest female athlete of all time, the nicest person that ever lived.
Yeah.
He's saying all the right things, but under it all, like, the sort of the consensus is that Team Taylor and Brian Peters, you know, they've Crow Park boxed off, but Eddie is a bit sceptical and nervous about 80,000. He thinks he needs Serrano to do 80,000.
Yeah.
We've said Katie'd sell it out, you know, shadow boxing, but he's not having that yet. So that's where the concern is. But this week he's been saying all the right things.
Yeah.
And probably would reveal his hand a little bit more tomorrow, or tonight, sorry, after the fight, and I just hope it does happen. Like, if anyone deserves it, it's Katie Taylor.
A roundup of everything that's going on in GAA right now with Declan Drake.
Kilmacud Crokes edged out Nafina by 3 points to claim back-to-back county championship titles in Dublin last weekend. On a sun-drenched afternoon in Parnell Park, they beat the Moby Roadmen by 20 points to 17, with Oisin O'Rourke scoring 9 points. The club now hold 3 of the 4 championship titles in Dublin. Well, after the game on the Parnell Park pitch, it was time for some reaction, starting with Crokes joint manager Kieran Dowling.
Kieran Dowling is with us here on the pitch at Parnell Park, the third successful Kilmacud Crokes manager to celebrate a county title in 2022. Kieran, so first of all, congratulations on that. A good team wins a county championship, a great team retains it, and that's what your boys did in some style today.
And that's exactly what we said on Thursday night, Declan, that's what this is about, is trying to build on the work that's been done at underage and make sure that we can keep going and keep winning. But you're right, when we came out in 2012 and 2014, in the following years, we never got beyond a quarter final. So it was important to us when we were setting targets for the year to get back here and go again and get back into a final. So we did that. We won today on back of all the hard work the lads did. And it wasn't easy. We've had a lot of injuries and a lot of retirements. I see Dylan Mulligan there with Damien Kelly, two lads that, you know, packed it in. So to get us back here has been some achievement, and it's just brilliant.
And to go through the year unbeaten as well makes it even sweeter, I'm sure.
Yeah, the championship, the league was difficult because we had so many lads away with Dublin under-20s and Dublin seniors. So to get a good run at the championship, and we've been building as the lads headed off, when they start coming back from their holidays, we start getting it together and building momentum. So it's been brilliant just to get that momentum in.
it's a squad effort, 25, 26 players, plus the guys who are pushing these guys but don't make the final match day squad. But one man stood out today, that was Oisin O'Rourke, when it really counted for you.
Oisin has been immense all year. We brought him out the field for about a year and a half ago to give him more space. Oisin was on a minor team that I would have had about 2010-11, and his pace, his movement, you know, his touch is just outstanding. So to get him out there where he can dominate games, it's just been brilliant. So it has.
Now it's back-to-back county titles, as we say, and you're into the Leinster Club Championship. You're going to be playing Cluck Ballacolla again, the team that beat you last year. It's here though in 3 weeks' time. It's a welcome break, I'm sure, in many respects, to enjoy a good celebration, first of all, which you deserve, and then just to get your heads around that game.
No, it is. And look, we'll enjoy the next couple of days and get back training later in the week and then start preparing. We need to get a couple of the videos out and try and work out where do we go from here. Declan Laffin is an outstanding manager and coach and tactician. So much so, he's in with Tipperary for next year. So we need to learn and adapt our game for the heavier pitch and the heavier days. But look, I got through today. I'm delighted. That was just brilliant. And to win again was just fantastic.
Next up was star man Oisin O'Rourke, who clipped over 9 points for his afternoon. He agreed that with such a turnover in squad over the last 12 months, this was a pretty special achievement for the group.
Yeah, definitely. So last year we were delighted to just get over the line after a good few losses the previous years. And then we had a lot of lads kind of step away or retire or move abroad this year, so we had a lot of new lads bet in, and they were just incredible. Now they've, that's probably in one sense is a positive, that they gave a new burst of energy to us. Us lads been around a while, and we just really got stronger and stronger throughout the championship, and it was shown today.
It was one of those county finals of yourself and Donald Burke, or it was almost a shootout between you, and you ultimately came out on top in the end. But those last crucial couple of minutes when the game was in the melting pot, the team's experience and craft seemed to come through well.
Yeah. I think our best trait in this team is definitely our character and our spirit, and today maybe weren't very at the top of our game. Our performance wasn't 100%, but we still managed to dig it out, and that shows. I think when we win, maybe not playing to your top level, I think it's a sign of a great team, so we did that today.
To be a member of a club that holds 3 of the 4 championship titles in Dublin in the 1 year, that's got to be some special feeling about what's going on out in Park de Bourke at the moment.
Yeah, there's serious buzz around Crokes now the last year or two, but it's just a case, look, good times here at the moment, they won't last. But it's gone down to volunteer work. It's down to lads and women putting in the great work, the underage, and building up teams over the years. So it's good at the moment, but we know it won't last forever.
Thanks for listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.